The Black Talk Media Project would like to invite you to become a member of the BTR Community subscription-based social media platform. BTR Community is a platform that was set up for the listening audience of Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent Black radio network online. For just $24 per year, your subscription gives you access to an interactive space to share information with like-minded people with your privacy guaranteed. Your subscription will go a long way to help us maintain and improve our current media platforms. It will also help provide a budget so that we can begin the task of establishing localized media centers and radio stations across the United States. The best way to show your support and appreciation for what we do here at Black Talk Radio is to subscribe. Help us to help you be informed. Join BTRCommunity.com today.
The views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
The necessity. Welcome. Let's begin.
Greetings. Welcome to another episode of Real Life with your host, me, myself, Jenna Capra, alongside my brother Rise. How are you this evening?
Still learning as always. Peace and love to all the callers and listeners, and to Scotty, of course.
Yes. Before we even get into it, for all of you who enjoyed the programs, the information, and just the conversation to speak with like-minded people without the interaction of any hate, for the most part. And just nonsense disagreeing. These are the things that Brother Scotty has afforded us. And if you benefit from that and enjoy that space, please go over to blacktalkradionetwork.com and give a little bit of your financial support. All of us are in need of help, but not all of us are doing something so selfless. So when you find somebody that's doing these type of things, we have to support them, because we always say that we support black businesses, yet the numbers don't come in to prove that fact. So I will be donating again. But yeah, that's one of the things. I just want to get that out the way. Today is Tuesday, June the 12th, 2018. And today's show is When You Know Better. When you know better, you do better. Sometimes the lesser of two evils is still evil. What do I mean by that? I mean that as we grow up, we do things as children, as adolescents, teenagers, young adults, full-grown adults, and then the elderly. If we are not learning throughout that time frame, then we're really just wasting our lives away. Regardless if you figured out whatever your purpose is in life, the one and true purpose before anything is to continue to evolve. First things first, you have to continue to evolve, because if you don't, you're continuously stuck in a rut. And as we have come into this information page, this information age, I find that sometimes, although the information is there, some of us can't comprehend the information to our liking. I'm not even going to say is that they don't understand it. I don't think it's to some people's liking what the actual truth is. Therefore, it has to be skewered to fit their own twisted perception of reality. So that's what I mean by when you know better, you do better sometimes. And when we operate in this space, that's when the lesser of two evils is still evil come in. Because more times than not, being hurt from a young age, whether it was through the system of white supremacy, other melanated people, we hold these grudges and they begin to shape the way that we view the world. And it's not always right, but it is. That's life, though. Things like that happen. And once we start to find this information out, we're supposed to be able to adjust. Because first and foremost, while we're trying to evolve, we're also simultaneously trying to produce justice, not just for us, but for everybody. And some people don't get a grip on that. So before we jump into the show today, Roz, did you want to add something before we get into these articles?
Yeah, I think you basically said it. Is just the to me, what you're describing is some people who function like the colonizer does. Because what is the system of white supremacy? In reality, Dr. Welson had talked about this a while ago. You know, white people don't like being pale. And she discussed this woman who ended up becoming a geneticist, very pale, pale white female. And this, she said this in a public article. I remember Dr. Welson read the article on the Cal, if I remember correctly. And the woman said that I think she had gone to Brazil on vacation. And she saw all of these bronze-skinned black women. And she felt like an outcast. She said she like just felt so completely inadequate looking at the beauty she saw amongst these melanated people. And she said that that difference, that visual contrast, is what made her go to school to become a geneticist. So they've created a system that puts them at the top, because in reality they don't necessarily feel that they are the best. So they have to fool the people they dominate into thinking that they are less so that they can feel good. And when you look at white folks, everything they say about black women, if you look at today, they're all trying to achieve. Whether it's their hair being curly, whether it's microwaving their skin to get cancer in order to get darker skin, because you have to remember that back in the early history of this country, that's where the term redneck came from. The opposite was true. If you had a red neck, that meant that you were toiling in the sun with the niggers. And if you were pale, that meant that you were indoors and you were running things. That's the way it used to be. Now we're in an age where white females are trying to look like us and we are trying to look like them. So it's a circular logic in self-fulfilling prophecy of stupidity. Because you have the dominant people trying to look like the people that they've dominated, and they've trained the dominated to try and look like them. That is severe mental illness right there. And when you have that kind of logic where I'm looking at something, it doesn't say what I want it to say. So as a result, I'm going to create my own narrative that spins off of a little bit of what this says, whether it's the title of an article or a sentence or two or a paragraph they took from the article. And then,
hey, Ross, real quick, while you talking about that, I just wanted to interject this real quick.
Absolutely.
for those folks who do those type of actions, please read the articles that you put up there, because there have been several mistaken posts, I believe, because absolutely, people will say something aligning themselves with the title of the article, and it has nothing to do with their viewpoint. I just want to throw that out there real quick.
Oh, yeah. So that's pretty much what I'll say just to wrap it up and get into the meat of the show. But ultimately, there's a severe mental illness there. you know, it's severe cognitive dissonance. And on that video you sent me about how to spot cognitive dissonance, whether it's in yourself or in other people, was very interesting, because that was one of the main premises of the video, is that basically cognitive dissonance is when a person has it firmly set in their mind that their ideas on a particular subject are correct and true and right and exact. And then they come across information that is actually updated. So it's not information that's coming out of left field. It's vetted information that proves whatever they thought was true before isn't correct, and they refuse to accept it. Now, what did Dr. Welsing say the job of a psychiatrist was? And especially because she made her focus racism, white supremacy in her practice. A psychiatrist's job is to get their patient to see, deal with, and understand reality even when they don't feel like it. So you have a person who doesn't feel like really being honest with what's in front of them, so they create a false narrative. So to me, that's the ultimate ode to the colonizer. That's just my opinion. I could be incorrect.
I'm gonna have to ponder on that one.
Yes, sir.
I'm working along those same type of guidelines, and it's difficult because every situation and every person is different. But yeah, when we find these particular scenarios, I see you, Brother Chris. I get with you in just a second. When we see these particular type of scenarios being acted out, more times than not, it always comes back to that same thing. You know, you could be completely on two different sides of the argument, but still operating from the same disease. And it's interesting to watch, and it's also painful, because the information is available, right, if you're willing to go find it. So it's sometimes you wanna let people know whatever those shortcomings, not in themselves, but just on the information and the information only. But what end up happening is that other shortcomings start being exposed, because some, you know, a lot of us don't like to be corrected. And we could know that we're wrong, but how dare you correct me? That's the mentality that a lot of us have. Brother Chris, welcome to the show, brother. How are you this evening?
I'm doing all right. Still learning, still surviving the game.
Yes, sir.
I think sometimes people they get confused with those terms. Just because a person that identifies, or how you identify them as, say, a white person, you know, gets a tan, does not mean that they're trying to be melanated, or because they are melanated, but just a different type of melanin, or they're not trying to be black. I think that we get confused with, oh, he think he's black, or oh, he's trying to be black because he's getting a tan. Because if you notice, a lot of people that get tans, if you ever met some of these people, some of them are very racist. Like, I mean, look at Donald Trump. He's orange. So,
oh yeah.
But I mean, I don't think he gets a tan because he's trying to look closer to Dennis Rodman. You know what I'm saying? So,
oh no, what it is that to have color is the norm. So what they're trying to do is look quote unquote normal, even though, because of the system of white supremacy, they have normalized whiteness. Even though, right, whiteness is the least, like, it's, they're the lowest population on the planet, but they've normalized it to the point where all their victims are seeking to be like them. Now, if someone
right there, before you even go any further into that point.
Yeah.
We gonna get into these medical articles first, and we gonna reserve that for the second half of the show.
Okay.
Because
okay.
Just to add to your point, Chris, what we're gonna get into is the moral authority, and who decides these racial classifications, and whether justice fit in that conversation. So that's what we're gonna be getting into at the top of the hour. So it's right along.
Yeah.
The statement that you made. But before we dig too deep off into that, we're gonna get through some of these articles that Brother Rise had. I have my own particular pains and stuff that I'm dealing with. You know, these almost 40 years are starting to make their way up to the surface. And I wanted to go over something that I know most of us don't know. Before we get into those articles, I am reading from the American Medical Association Family Medical Guide. It's just a, it's basically a medical dictionary. Now, I have several, but this one in particular, it explained to me a little more in depth the differences. What I want to talk about right now, because I do heavy work. When I am at work, I build records. And prior to that, I was a diesel mechanic. So I put a lot of stress on my body. And what I have found out is that a lot of us don't know the difference between a pulled muscle, a sprain, or even a severed tendon. So I'm not going to go into all of these. I just want to read the symptoms so that you can identify these things, because as we know, time and time again, when we go to the doctor, they misdiagnose us and give us some stuff that has nothing to do with our ailments. Now, it may fade those pains out temporarily, but if you know what's going on with your body, then you could adequately take care of that yourself by way of some of the herbs. And make no mistake, the herbs are not going to knock this pain out or cure you right off the bat. More times than not, these are preventive actions, so that when things are happening to you, you already have that capability put into your body prior to the injury. So for me saying that, I want to go over a pulled muscle. If a muscle is overstretched, some muscle fibers may tear. If this happens, the muscle contracts and may also swell because of internal bleeding. Occasionally, the muscle may be ruptured or torn completely. Now, what are the symptoms? The main symptom is pain, of course, when the injury occurs. The pulled muscle feels tender, may become swollen, and will not function effectively until the torn fibers have healed. If the muscles are ruptured, it will not function at all. The muscle that gradually becomes stiff, painful, and tender, often overnight, has probably been strained. In addition, a few of the fibers may have been torn. Now, I want to, because we got treatments in here, and that's what I'm going to get right to, is the treatment. Okay. So I'm going to skip over the risk and what should be done. I'm going to go right to the treatment. Self-help. Apply ice wrapped in a cloth or an ice pack to the area to help prevent further swelling and to decrease the pain. Try not to use the pulled muscle for several days or while pain persists. Bandaging and wrapping the affected area will help decrease swelling, but be careful not to bind it too tightly. This could cause further swelling, which might then interfere with blood circulation. I bring all of that up because I played football, basketball, wrestled. And a lot of times when we got diagnosed pulled muscle, strained muscle, what have you, we would get the wrong diagnosis. And I know that a lot of us have children. I have five myself. Maybe have some for the ones of you who don't have children. We tend to look at these things and let them go. And what that does is that it makes us grow in a disfigured way. Not in no like Elephant Man, you know, pumpkin head type of disfigurement. But we're not able to use our limbs in the correct way. And more times than not, we're always up under a stressful environment. So we don't even, for the most part, most of us don't even know what a healthy body feels like. So when you have these pains, you just treat them as something that you have to go through, because us being black men and women in this system of racism, we always have to keep on going. But if we do our due diligence, and as Brother Davis would say, if we do our due diligence and we start learning our own bodies, we will make so many strides as far as just being able to walk around healthy, and we know we're healthy. And when something is coming into our body that is foreign, whether that's a disease or injury, we'll be able to tackle that at the when the problem happens, and not after it has been festering over years, like a lot of us normally do. You want to add to that before I go to the springs, Brother Ross?
Yes. The thing, one thing that stood out is in the beginning, when you were talking about the remedy, you said put ice on it immediately to reduce the swelling. So again, I've said this before. I know Dr. Sabies talked about this, and he also focuses on mucus, which I agree. But the foundation of illness is inflammation. Alzheimer's is inflammation of the brain and what they call amyloid beta protein that builds up in the brain and starts to kill the brain cells. Last week, I discussed the fact that THC in marijuana is now scientifically proven to help remove that amyloid beta protein plaque. Also, so basically it can almost start facilitating even reversing the condition, because once you remove that, that stops the cause of the cell death. So inflammation, CBD, is one of the best things you can utilize for inflammation. It is non-psychoactive. They do not test for it on drug tests, but you can utilize it, and I've utilized it, and it's something that works incredibly well, because it actually also reduces nervous system inflammation. Now, nervous system inflammation is also a cause of depression. Most people think depression is just feeling really severely sad or pushed to the edge of suicide or things like that. Those are symptoms. And I posted articles on this on BTR before. Medically, they found that the brain is inflamed. So again, that inflammation is causing changes in the emotional state. I know that my mother-in-law, in the early stages of her dementia, had impulse control issues where she would get very upset and act out, you know, just because she was just so frustrated with the fact that her mind wasn't working properly, and she had no better way to express it except an impulse control issue. Now, she just turned 83 yesterday, and she's a totally different person.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And, you know, one of the things that helped us was utilizing CBD. You know, another thing that helps with brain inflammation are certain essential oils that you can actually diffuse. Rosemary is one. It also helps to enhance the memory. So if you're going to take tests or you need to study, your children are studying, you should be diffusing that around them. It will help facilitate them actually learning. There's a specific combination of oils. I would have to go dig it up, and it's really put away, but I call it my memory set. And when I put it together, my son used it in college and he swore by it. When I taught myself before taking the test to become a health insurance broker, I did all of that on my own. The salespeople who did it in the company I worked for, they went through classes. I didn't have the classes. I just had to actually study on the computer, take these mock tests, and then go take the actual test. And I was able to pass the test. And I used that oil when I was studying, and I used that oil the day of the test. So it's something that I've personally experienced. It's something my son has personally experienced. So there's a lot of different things you can do to facilitate easing inflammation, especially of the nervous system, because the nervous system doesn't have pain sensors. So you wouldn't know that the brain is inflamed. You would just see the byproduct like depression, or the byproduct like Alzheimer's, or the byproduct like Parkinson's. And we all know that mental illnesses, whether it's autism, ADHD, Parkinson's, and even Alzheimer's, has a direct connection to the health of your gut. And they're finding more and more intimate connections to the gut and the brain than they've ever knew existed before, even nervous system connections. So, you know, this is a very important thing. So go ahead, Jenna. Let me let you continue, but you're going to get into it.
When you was talking about your mother-in-law, man, it made me think about strokes.
Yes.
Because these are something that, especially if you have a horrible eating habits, mm-hmm. you tend to have feelings, temporary paralysis, that you like, yo, I must be having a muscle spasm. You know, that's an actual mini stroke that you're experiencing, and we wait for it to clear, and then we go ahead on. So before I get to the sprain, let me just go to this real quick. Like I said, man, I find so much.
Now, it's weird you said something about strokes, too, because that's directly connected to the health of your mouth. If your mouth is not healthy, your chances of heart attack and stroke skyrocket, because the plaque that builds up on your teeth will eventually end up in your bloodstream. That's why when your gums bleed, it's allowing that bacteria and the plaque itself into your bloodstream. That is the same.
Now, hold on a second, in the heart. Roz.
Mm-hmm.
I was unaware of that, and I have a quick question, because some Absolutely. People mouths bleed all the time.
So oh yeah, that means their gums are completely unhealthy.
Is that a severe amount of disease coming up out of their gums?
Absolutely.
Does that mean?
Absolutely. But when the gums bleed, that is not a healthy state at all. It is actually, and the worse it bleeds, the worse the condition is. And that's what caused the gums to recede. When you see people where they have so much of the tooth exposed, it's almost like the root is exposed, that's because their gums are receding. So the more plaque you allow on your teeth, the more, the longer periods between you brushing your teeth is really something that you don't want to play with. Because even before you go for surgery, even if it's minor surgery, they ask you if you've been to the dentist first, because going to the dentist can dislodge that plaque and put it in your bloodstream. There are different herbs you can use to help clear out the arteries and whatnot, but you would have to completely change your diet as far as making sure that, you know, that it's done first of all, and then once it's done, that you don't facilitate the process again. And one of the major points of that.
You're creating more questions. Hold on. I'm sorry.
Yes,
I'm
sir.
Sorry. Is the, because I've been experimenting with these clays and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
When those clays attempt to make you believe that they clean the bloodstream. Several case studies I've read over, not going to get into tonight. I don't have them in front of me at the moment. But several case studies, you know, they make the claim that they clean your bloodstream.
Mm-hmm.
This is the same thing they do with some of these machines when people go into the hospital, because their liver is not filtering it. So they use these machines.
Right.
But that's the claim that the like bentonite clay, one of the ones I've been experimenting with.
Yeah, bentonite clay is actually good. Go ahead.
I'm saying, my question is, though, is does that clear some of that plaque out of the bloodstream, or is that is it only dealing with the blood and it leaves the actual buildup on the arteries?
Yeah, that I really can't say. I really don't know about that. What I can say is that the plaque itself, plaque in your mouth, actually comes from bacteria. So if you kill the bacteria in the mouth, you won't see plaque. That's why I use colloidal silver. I have a water flosser that I use, and I put colloidal silver in the water every time I floss, twice a day. When I use my toothpaste, which is an all-natural essential oil Dead Sea mineral salt-based toothpaste, I also add 75 part per million colloidal silver gel. So when I'm actually moving that brush along my gum line, silver's getting all up in my gum line. When I'm flossing my mouth, and it's a very powerful jet that comes out of there, that silver's getting deep under the gum line, and it's clearing out any food particles that were left over from the day before. So your mouth will become optimally healthy by incorporating colloidal silver. I also use a colloidal silver mouthwash that also includes 4-Thieves oil. So it's 4-Thieves and colloidal silver. It's by, believe it's Young Living. They sell it on Amazon. But it's something that I could honestly say has revolutionized the health of my mouth. Go ahead.
Yeah, we down here at the bottom of the hour, because I know these health conversations can take up man, you know the kind of talks we've been having. Let's kind of speed through this a little bit. Let me get back to this, and then we're gonna get into those into some of those articles that's in the grid. This, like I said, you reminded me of this thing I was looking at about a stroke. A stroke occurs when part of the brain is damaged because its blood supply is disturbed. A lot of that happens with us, particularly because we drink everything but water for the most part. Dehydration. Continuing, that's not in the book. That's just something that I know. As a result, the physical or mental functions controlled by the injured area are predominantly damaged, or sometimes may be partially restored via alternate pathways. The disturbance may be from one of three types of vernacular disorders: cerebral, tuberosis, and I know I'm butchering this, I apologize.
It's all right.
Cerebral embolism or cerebral hemorrhaging.
Okay.
The first of these, cerebral thrombosis, can happen when an artery that supplies blood to the brain is narrowed, most usually from this is crazy. I shouldn't be reading this. Acceleratus, a plaque, like you just stated, Ross.
Uh-huh.
A plaque or a large deposit of cholesterol at the narrowed and roughened portion of the artery may break open and make a place where the blood can coagulate and form a thrombus or a clot.
Mm-hmm.
This thrombus may grow until it partially or completely blocks the artery. Now, I'm not even gonna go through the rest of those because it's quite lengthy.
One of my good friends, her husband was a world-renowned jazz artist, and that's where he passed away from. His name is Tony Ritas, and he was coming back from Italy from a gig, and he didn't know it at the time, but he had a blood clot in his leg. And they say whenever you have a blood clot, the last thing you should be doing is traveling, but he didn't know. So the flight was fine. He had no problems. But the moment he landed, he got off the plane and passed out right there in the airport and died shortly thereafter. And it was because the clot moved from his leg to his brain and caused a stroke. You know, the crazy thing about strokes is that I posted an article in BTR community in the health thread that was discussing the fact that marijuana actually helps heal the brain from traumatic injury and stroke, because really the brain is made of fat. It's fat cells.
That
cannabis can help heal the brain after trauma, including dealing with stroke, because the brain is actually made of fat cells, and cannabis bonds to fat cells. The brain actually makes its own cannabinoid. Every living thing with a central nervous system creates its own marijuana, its own cannabinoids. And all of the things that, you know, utilizing marijuana, whether it's eating it, making the tea out of it, smoking it, whatever, your brain does it for itself. And most people's cannabinoid system is actually insufficient. They usually don't produce enough cannabinoids. So just because of the world we live in, just the way that we function, because as ancient beings, we used to partake of plants that had cannabinoids. Echinacea has cannabinoids in it. I posted an article with like six other plants that have cannabinoids in it. So you can get a similar effect without worrying about passing a drug test. CBD, they don't test for it because it's non-psychoactive. So you can utilize it and get the benefits of stopping pain. Some people have been living with pain so long, it's normal to them. They don't even realize they're in pain. Then they take CBD and the pain goes away and they're able to stand up straight for the first time. And they actually realize like, oh snap, I've been living this way for like 20 years. Because they were so used to being in pain all the time, they just adjusted to being in pain. Then they take the CBD, it goes away. They're able to normalize their function because it's caused by inflammation. CBD and THC reduces inflammation. So, I mean, even when you're dealing with epilepsy, brain inflammation triggers a seizure. You get the inflammation down, the seizures stop. CBD does that. It does that. You know, the government has even you know, I remember one lady in Philadelphia, she brought her son to a town hall meeting they were having regarding medically legalizing marijuana. It was on my local news station. And her son used to have 400 seizures a day. She said he was down to like, he was down to like 40.
Yo, you don't even have to use, you don't even have to use that. We both have a mutual friend that we didn't help.
Absolutely.
That we know personally. So you can go and you can use that as an example. That's right. Not hearsay, something that you read.
And that's, and the illness that she had was lupus. And she, her seizure count dropped dramatically, excessively dramatically, and we incorporated colloidal silver. And those two things seemed to be the exactly what she needed. Because when she went to the doctor, they were flabbergasted at her numbers, and she wasn't taking any of the medication they gave her. She was taking CBD, and she was taking colloidal silver. So, the, again, this is something we've personally experienced with this person, and she's an incredible, incredible black woman. Just a strong mother and wonderful human being. Just want to give her a shout-out, too. I got to give her a call. But, yeah, go ahead. Well, let me let you get through that so we can hop into these articles, too. But, yeah, just had to put that out there. Maybe somebody's suffering from lupus, and they might not have heard about this stuff. But if you go to thesilveredge.com, I would say it's probably the most comprehensive site about colloidal silver and all the different illnesses that it's known to cure. And they have testimonials from people who have had those illnesses, who have gotten that relief, whether it's MS, lupus, and a whole host of other ones. You can go in there and see it for yourself. And
you can't forget to add, you can't forget to add that a lot of these people in these testimonials are no longer they're no longer recognizing these diseases in their blood work either.
Absolutely, yes, that's a major part of it. So you know,
yeah. But let me get on to that though. Let me get on to these symptoms. Many of the symptoms of strokes are extremely frightening. You may wake up and find you cannot speak or move part of your body, or you may, while conscious, feel an arm or leg become heavy, numb, or uncontrollable. Sometimes a stroke begins with a sudden loss of consciousness. Among the many other possible symptoms of a stroke are headaches, numbness, blurred or double vision, confusion, and dizziness. Often the functions of only one side of the body are affected. My apologies, my pages was getting stuck.
No problem.
Because damage is usually limited to one side of the brain, and each side of the brain controls only one side of the body. They are specific areas of the brain that control movement and sensation in definite parts of the body or functions such as vision, memory, and speech. Thus, there is a characteristic pattern of symptoms that indicate which cerebral artery is malfunctioning. For example, you may have weakness or numbness in your arm or hand, or on one side of your face, which my younger brother experienced this before, and we didn't know what it was. And that's this is one of the reasons why trying to bring this information to you. If the stroke affects the brain stem, which connects the brain and spinal cord, then actions such as swallowing may be affected. The stroke often causes loss of some or all sensation in parts of the body affected. In any event, the symptoms of the stroke, unlikely those of a transient ischemic attack, persists for at least 24 hours and usually longer. Now, I'm not going to read the professional help. I'm going to just read the self-help. Self-help. What is the treatment? Self-help. You can do nothing in the first week after you have had a stroke, but you can do much to guard against strokes or prevent them from reoccurring. Have your blood pressure checked regularly. If it's high, Be sure to take the medications your physician prescribes. Do not smoke or eat too much fat, and exercise regularly. The only thing I would disagree with that, and I'm not telling anybody here to disagree with that, I self-medicate myself, and I wouldn't advise nobody to do that if you're not willing to purchase books such as this to be able to identify these symptoms and have holistic material that you could reference to treat yourself. But the only thing that I personally do not do is take the medication that the doctor prescribes. Every time I go to the doctor, which is not often, but when I'm having some type of pain that I just can't deal with and I'm just so baffled by pain and I can't think, I have to go to him and see what's going on. I treat it the same way I treat my vehicle. I take them in there, I let them diagnose me, and then I ask them what are the holistic alternatives. I don't want to take your manufactured pill. I would much rather have what you manufactured the pills based from. I would much rather take that. And that's the route that I take. I took up too much time, so I'm not even going to
Hey, I have a question.
Go ahead, Brother Scotty.
Well, not really a question, but just wanted to share some information. Now, this information has been hidden from us a long time, but you know, stroke is one of the ailments that cannabis can help, according to research. And so we've been fed this anti-cannabis propaganda for decades, you know, for various purposes, whether it's because the paper industry didn't want people to start using hemp, you know, because they already had all these acres of trees that they making paper from, when you can make the same paper from easily grown hemp, which is in the cannabis family, or whether it was to demonize a certain ethnic group for using it so they can then put them in prison, you know, the reefer madness propaganda. But now, you know, it's all of this, the health benefits are coming to light and being acknowledged in the mainstream. And so, you know, it says that you know, cannabis can even help stroke victims by minimizing the brain damage and also minimizing the inflammation of the brain. And I mean, it's just a lot of research, but I'm gonna just share this one. I'm gonna post it in the chat room at uberconference.com. It says the promising effects of cannabinoids in stroke recovery. So some of this is where they're extracting the oils from cannabis, which they use a lot to treat people who are having epileptic seizures and what have you. But it says, according to the Heart and Stroke Foundation, you lose 1.9 million brain cells per minute when suffering from a stroke. Stroke hit seemingly at random and can target anyone, young, old, men, women, even children. They affect around 33 million people worldwide. Now, let me jump down. It says, it's talking about research. A team of researchers at Fukuoka University in Japan recently made a breakthrough in stroke treatment. Their research study investigated whether a cannabinoid found within the cannabis plant called it's called CBD. It's the term for it.
Cannabidiol.
Yeah. Could be an effective treatment option during rehabilitation. This theory has been supported by other preliminary research studies, which all have found that CBD shows encouraging signs as a potential post-stroke therapy for ischemic strokes, one or two types of strokes. What's that again?
Ischemic.
Ischemic stroke. Okay. And along with hemorrhagic strokes. So it says the current body of research seems to show speedier and broader recovery in patients and incredible neuroprotection. Only two treatment options are available, so having another effective option for stroke recovery is compelling news for victims and their families. And I'll post that in the chat, fellas.
Yes, thank you for reading that. Yes. And I was just talking about that very thing. My uncle, he died of 9 strokes. He had 9 strokes in a row in one night. and that's how he passed away. My father brought him here from Trinidad to get treatment because he couldn't get the proper treatment there, and that's how he ended his life here. What's up?
Raz, I'm sorry, and I know you want to go through this, but we got 15 minutes to the top of the hour.
Yeah, I know.
need you to run through some of these articles, and we'll hold up on the late conversation. We'll cut that down maybe a quarter after 10, maybe.
You give okay, me a that's little fine. Extra I just, time. Yeah, I'll just run My through apologies. This real quick.
And plus, you got to be able to put the video that you wanted to share into the chat room.
It's actually in the thread, you know.
Okay, I take care of it. Go ahead, brother.
Okay, the other one, the college one, you got to find that because I don't even think I posted it in there. I just actually saw it online. But okay, so let me get into this real quick because I know we got the commercial break in about 15, a little less than 15. So this one is found that there's an EO for that.com, and this is essential oils for depression. So let me see. According to the Complete Guide to Aromatherapy by Salvatore Battaglia, depression is considered an illness that seriously affects the ability to cope with life, appetite, energy for activity, sex drive, and sleep. A patient with depression must be diagnosed with at least 5 of the below symptoms for 2 weeks. Criterion 1 or 2 would be important or essential for diagnoses. Depressed mood, loss of interest or pleasure, significant weight loss or gain, insomnia or hypersomnia, meaning sleeping a lot, psychomotor agitation and retardation, fatigue or loss of energy, feeling of excess guilt or worthlessness, impaired thinking, concentration or indecisiveness, suicidal thoughts. Other symptoms may include the feelings of not being able to cope with life, continual tiredness, a lost sense of humor, loss of a sense of humor, tension and anger, irritability or fearfulness, somatic symptoms such as headache, constipation, indigestion, dry mouth, and unusual pains in the chest or abdomen. So if you have any of those, it would be advised to seek out a physician. And of course, depression can be a very serious mental illness, so do not take it lightly. We as Black people.
Hey, can I add this real quick?
Absolutely.
Remember that depression being diagnosed by the doctor as being depressed, this is another way that they're using to take your guns also.
Right. And again, depression, like I said, I did post an article about it, is facilitated by brain inflammation. So these essential oils actually help with depression. You have basil, which is good for anxiety, fatigue, and depression. It's an uplifting oil. Bergamot, which is a citrus-based oil, a citrus type of oil, helps with feelings of pain, anxiety, sadness, and depression. Frankincense slows the breathing, helps to reduce fear, nervous tension, anxiety, and stress. Geranium is a natural sedative, lifts the spirits, releases negativity, and eases depression and stress. Jasmine is uplifting and it eases spasms. Lavender eases nervousness, anxiety, depression. It helps with insomnia and fear. Lemongrass is purifying and uplifting, combats negativity and stress and depression. Lemon verbena is a bright essential oil that uplifts even the darkest moods. Mandarin is emotionally uplifting and cheerful. It's also the citrus oils are very good for the brain and for facilitating energy too. So it helps to focus the mind as well. So I just wanted to throw that out there. Neroli, orange oil, which is energizing. It has an uplifting aroma that eases panic, fear, anger, irritation, and nervousness. Roman chamomile is a oil for easing stress, anxiety, and depression. Sandalwood, which is one of my favorites, is also really good. It's a slight sedative as well. And it also helps with stress because of that slight sedative property to it. Sweet marjoram, tangerine, and liang liang. So you can actually put them in a spritzer bottle, and it gives instructions there. You can use water or witch hazel, and you can get like a 1 ounce spray bottle, and you would add 30 to 40 drops of your favorite blend of oils from that list. And then from there, you can just mix it up and spray it, usually like in your palm, and put it to your nose and inhale it that way. You can also put it in a diffuser, and that way you'll be able to just continuously have that scent you know, around you, and the closer you get to it, you can actually inhale the vapors directly from the diffuser, which would be almost like taking a nebulizer of nanoparticle essential oils, and that should really help, because through the nasal passage into the lungs is the fastest way for the essential oils to do its work. So I would just say that. I'm going to move on from that. The next one is an essential oils for shingles relief. My father-in-law suffered from that really bad, and I didn't get to use this with him. But basically deals with essential oils that can facilitate getting rid of that nervous system pain and itchiness, severe itchiness and inflammation of the skin that comes with shingles. So check that one out. The next one is from Healthline.com, 8 Impressive Benefits of Pineapple. And this one is really great. Pineapple is just an amazing fruit. I don't think many people really think about it that way, but it's something that is has a lot of different properties that are amazing. So this is number one. It's from Healthline.com. They're very high in nutrients. 1 cup or 5.8 ounces of pineapple chunks contains the following: 82.5 calories, 1.7 grams of fat, 1 gram of protein, 21.6 carbs, 2.3 grams of fiber, 131% of the recommended daily allowance of vitamin C, 76% of the RDI of manganese, 9% of the RDI of vitamin B6, 9% of the RDI for copper, 9% for thiamine as well, 7% of the RDI for folate, 5% of the RDI for potassium, 5% of the RDI for magnesium, 4% of the RDI for niacin, pantothenic acid, 4% of the RDI of that, 3% of the RDI for riboflavin, and 3% of the RDI for iron. It also contains trace amounts of vitamin A and K, phosphorus, zinc, and calcium. They are especially rich in vitamin C and manganese, providing 131 and 76% of the daily recommendations, respectively. Vitamin C is essential for growth and development, a healthy immune system, and aiding the absorption of iron from the diet. Meanwhile, manganese is a naturally occurring mineral that aids in growth, maintains healthy metabolism, and has antioxidant properties. Also, vitamin C kills free radicals as well. It's one of the major antioxidants. So actually, that's the next thing it talks about, is pineapples being rich in nutrients and healthy antioxidants. Antioxidants are molecules that help your body combat oxidative stress. Oxidative stress is a state in which there are too many free radicals in the body. These free radicals interact with the body cells and cause damage that is linked to chronic inflammation, a weakened immune system, and many harmful diseases, which includes cancer. Pineapples are especially rich in antioxidants, known as flavonoids and phenolic acids. What's more, many of the antioxidants in pineapple are bound. This allows the antioxidants to survive harsher conditions in the body and produce longer-lasting effects. Its enzymes can ease digestion. It may reduce the risk of cancer. Number 5, may boost the immunity and suppress inflammation. That's the biggest thing. May ease symptoms of arthritis. May reduce speed recovery after surgery and or strenuous exercise. It's easy to add to the diet, and of course it's delicious. And so these are just some of the benefits there. It's something that you want to get into. There's a tea that I use sometimes to go to sleep, and it's a Lipton tea, but it's pineapple and chamomile. It's one of the best tasting teas I've ever had, and it will relax you and put you out if you need to get some sleep. So that's one I would recommend. It's in like these pyramidal shaped tea bags. Another one here, this one is humansarefree.com, and these are different foods that shield your body from Fukushima type radiation, and they give a list of 10 natural foods. One of them is chlorella, so I just wanted to put that in there, so if people are interested in figuring out ways they can mitigate any sort of toxins from radioactive activity, then this article specifically speaks to that. Also, I have an article that's actually pinned on my profile on BTR Community that deals with the fact that that cannabis also is known to take radioactive waste and heavy metals out of soil. And that is something that is documented, and they were talking about utilizing it to facilitate healing the earth from Fukushima. So, cannabis is just an incredible plant, like Brother Scotty was talking about earlier. One thing I wanted to really talk about This is very important because it kind of shocked me too. But this is from Humans Are Free. Shocking connection. 97% of all terminal cancer patients previously had this dental procedure. Now, I talked about the mouth and its connection to disease. Do you have a chronic degenerative disease? If so, have you been told it's all in your head? Well, that might not be far from the truth. Do you have a chronic degenerative disease? If so, they have it twice. Let me get into this because it's basically saying if you have had root canals, 97% of all terminal cancer patients previously had root canals before they got terminal cancer. What happens is if you have dental implants, when they remove the root of your tooth and they put that screw in your mouth, the mouth can actually foster infection in the screws, in the metal itself, and it'll sit there and fester, and that is what can cause the problem. And most dentists don't even mention that that has become an issue. So it says here, this is it. Root canal teeth are essentially dead teeth that can become silent incubators for highly toxic anaerobic bacteria that can, under certain conditions, make their way into your bloodstream to cause a number of serious medical conditions, many not appearing until decades later. Most of these toxic teeth feel and look fine for many years, which make their role in systemic disease even harder to trace back. Sadly, the vast majority of dentists are oblivious to the serious potential health risks they are exposing their patients to, risks that persist for the rest of their patients' lives. The American Dental Association claims root canals have been proven safe, but they have no published data or actual research to substantiate this claim. Fortunately, I had some mentors like Dr. Tom Stone and Dr. Douglas Cook, who educated me on this issue nearly 20 years ago. Were it not for a brilliant pioneering dentist who more than a century ago made the connection between root canal teeth and disease, this underlying cause of disease may have remained hidden to this day. The dentist's name was Weston Price, or greatest dentist of all time. Most dentists would be... Let's see, I just want to get to what they actually say. Dr. Price was a dentist and researcher who traveled the world to study the teeth, bones, and diets of native populations living without the quote-unquote benefit of modern food. Around the year 1900, Price had been treating persistent root canal infections and became suspicious that root canal teeth always remained infected in spite of treatment. Then one day he recommended to a woman wheelchair-bound for 6 years to have her root canal tooth extracted, even though it appeared to be fine. She agreed. So he extracted her tooth and then implanted it under the skin of a rabbit. The rabbit amazingly developed the same crippling arthritis as the woman and died from the infection 10 days later. But the woman, now free of the toxic tooth, immediately recovered from her arthritis and could now walk without the assistance of a cane. Price discovered that it's mechanically impossible to sterilize a root canal tooth. He then went on to show that many chronic degenerative diseases originate from root-filled teeth, the most frequent being heart and circulatory diseases. He actually found 16 different causative bacterial agents for these conditions, but there was also strong correlations between root-filled teeth and diseases of the joints, brain, and nervous system. I'll stop there. I think this should give a lot of people pause for thought, and I think it should also push a lot of people who have root canals, deal with that colloidal silver. Put it in your flosser. I have two root canals, yeah. And I have one that I have replaced. The other one I haven't, and I don't think I'm going to replace the other one. But the one that I do have, that flosser, I don't mess around. Twice a day, every day, and then I also have a little bottle of silver that I carry with me every day when I travel to the city, and I use that at work after I eat lunch, and I clean my mouth out. Then I usually sit it in my mouth for about a half hour while I'm sitting there doing my work.
Yo, so, we about ready to go. We about ready to get into the first break. But we're not going to be able to get to all of these articles.
No, we're not.
But yo, I noticed that we have a lot of shout out to all of the viewers that's checking us out. You know, a whole lot of unknowns. You know, shout out to y'all, whether you like us or not.
True
that. You have enough confidence in us to check us out. So that's dope all on its own. But go check into these threads. Me, myself, I haven't been able to post the way I would like to. home problems. You know, I'm replacing some things and it's taking all of my time and my energy. But Brother Roz has held me down to a very, very high maximum. And these articles are important not only to us, but to you. Like I said, when you can identify these things, you're not so scared, and you can sit back and you can think and figure these things out for yourself. Remember, all of our ancestors, those the healthiest people on the earth, you know, they lived to be 100 plus years old.
Mm-hmm.
And we're dying off at 70 if we're lucky.
Man, so dying at 40.
All of these things play a huge part. But with that being said, you are listening to Real Life, the radio show, with myself, Jenna, alongside my brother, Rise. We'll be right back right after this commercial break.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Not a Wu-Tanga. Man, I don't know why I like that so much, Scotty.
Me too. In my head, yo. It's infectious, I must say. Yeah.
Yes, it is. In a good way, though.
Yes.
Man, is this we here at the second hour. If you have a question or comment, by all means, y'all give us a call. That number is 704-802-5056. That number again is 704-802-5056. Press ** to be heard, and we'll get with you as soon as possible. If you would, for us, Brother Scotty, would you play that second video that I played? Because it's gonna set the table for this second half discussion.
Keep the white man out of your business. Keep the white man out of your affairs. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad says separation is the best and only solution between the blacks and whites with the problem that the two people face. And since he said it was the best and only solution, that's good enough for me. I don't want to be a part of something that before has been so strong and uncompromising with the white man. To see it in any way even appear, even if I have a misunderstanding of it and haven't quite clearly seen correctly, even if the appearance on the surface is that, I'm sorry, I can't. In anything like that. Every time the white man has come, he has destroyed. He came into Africa, he destroyed us. He came in, the Indians, the red man and woman, Indians as they are called, our brothers and sisters, they wanted to integrate with the white man. They taught him how to grow his crops. They saved his life. He married among the red Indians. They integrated with him fully, the red man, the so-called Indians, with the white man. He gave them dope. He gave them fire water, alcohol. He took their land. And now the original owner of this nation is selling moccasins and blankets on a reservation. And the white man owns America. Integration is disintegration.
That's right.
Integration is disintegration.
That's right.
Well, Brother Khalid Muhammad, you said you had traveled around the world, and everywhere you went, you saw white on top and black on the bottom.
I said everywhere I went, and the black-white dynamic existed in that place.
Okay, you saw the black and white dynamic exist in everywhere you went. And basically, it's been asserted that the actual founder of the Nation of Islam, that is Master Farad Muhammad, was a white man from Persia. And Elijah Muhammad also had white people in his family genealogy. So how do you answer the question as to the difference between white and black and all people being children of God?
Hey, Brother Kwame, you ask good white man questions. I don't think a white man could ask better white man questions than you do. I understand your question that you asked, and I understand the question under the question that you asked. And hell, I'm going to answer both of them.
Okay. All right now.
He said, in words, you give such a hard line on the white people when it is said that the founder of the Nation of Islam, Master Farad Muhammad, was a white man. How do you answer this question about Master Farad Muhammad being a white man? He says, in a devilish way.
Right.
And it is said that Elijah Muhammad was part white because he had some major white blood in him. And to such a devilish question, hopefully I can give a godly answer. Master Farad Muhammad's father was black and his mother was white. If the Honorable Elijah Muhammad has whites in his family, and as I said earlier, if I have whites in my family, black is dominant.
That's right.
And white is recessive.
That's right.
You can get the recessive from the dominant, but you can't get the dominant from the recessive. According to Mendel's law or Mendelian law, you will find that the dark eye is dominant. The blue eye, the green eye, the hazel eye is recessive. You can get the dark eye in its original form only from God Almighty.
That's right.
But you can get the hazel or the blue eye rested from the dominant dark eye. Out of the original black man and woman came the brown man and woman. And from the brown man and woman came the yellow and the red man and woman. And out of all of them came at the end of the genetic ladder, make sure you make that edit right there. At the end of the genetic ladder is the white man. The white man and woman can't produce anybody but themselves.
That's right.
It is biologically and genetically impossible for the recessive white man and woman to produce the dominant yellow baby.
They get
it is biologically and genetically impossible for the recessive yellow man and woman to produce the brown baby. Mm-hmm. It is biologically and genetically impossible for the brown man and woman to produce the dominant black baby. Right, right. But that black man and his woman, as dominant as they are, as black as they are, they can be so black until they're purple black, blue black. So black until they're blacker than 150 million midnights. So black until it look like if they spit, they would spit ink. But they can produce black.
That's right.
They can produce the brown baby. They can produce a red baby. They can produce the yellow baby. And if the seed runs wild in the womb of that black woman with her black man, she can even produce something if that seed mutates or runs wild. She can even produce something that is whiter than white, whose eyes are bluer than blue, whose hair is blonder than blonde, and they are called albinos. Albinism is a sign in the black man and woman to let you know that you are absolutely the father and mother of black, brown, red, yellow, and white, and that none of them would be on the planet if it were not for the original black man and black woman. So if Master Farad Muhammad's father was a blue-black original man and his mother was a white woman, then Master Farad Muhammad is a black man because his daddy was dominant. And because the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, you say, it is reported, has whites in his family, he would have to walk around, we would have to walk around the dominant people with a sign saying, I got some white in me. Because when you look at us, you can see Africa.
That's right.
When you look at us, you can see black.
Black
when you look at us, you can see original.
Black.
Even in the face of Master Farag Muhammad, you can see some dominant features from the original black
that's
father
right,
that he came from.
Yes,
black power.
Now, what's the next
black
damn devilish question?
All right.
I feel like in 2013, the web didn't value people who made content. And the idea behind Patreon was solving that problem. How to pay creators what they should actually be making, what they're actually worth to the world, and how the world should value art, and how the world should value artists.
Patreon is a way to show your support and that you believe
right
in our future.
Yeah. If you don't know what Patreon is, it's a really...
Thank you. It was just it's just some ads after that.
Yeah, it's a short video.
Yeah, I wanted to get into that because there has been a lot of circulation, like we stated a couple weeks ago, as far as and it's not to pick on Melanated Roots, but this is where this particular conversation started.
Yes.
What I like to do is that when people qualify their statements, I like to go to the source. Some people qualify their statements by way of the NOI, which that was just a representation of, and we see the rhetoric that they use. Other people like to go to Dr. Wilson, Neely Fuller Jr., and sometimes even shout out to Gus T. Renegade. They like to qualify their statements based off of Gus T. Renegade. I was in not really an altercation, nothing that I even really need to acknowledge, but there were some statements made. So I went on to the cows, since that was the qualifier of these statements that was being made, and I asked him a direct question. And it was funny to me, because me being my own man, I'm gonna make my own decisions. But I do like to hear the input, especially of the people that, for instance, if you was telling me something, Roz, and you said that, yeah, this is how I feel, and brother Scotty felt the same way. Well, I'm gonna take what you brought to me. And I'm gonna ask Brother Scotty a question about that. That's just how I'm wired, you know.
And that's how you should be. Yep.
And if for whatever reason, the person making the statement and their qualifier are not on the same page. For a long time, we dealt with colorism and what have you. One of my favorite movies, man, Denzel Washington. The Devil in the Blue Dress. You ever see that, Roz?
No, I've never seen it. I've only seen the very beginning of it and then never see the whole thing.
Yo,
I've never seen it. Actually,
yo,
I have to sit down and watch it now that you said it.
Yes, I have partners from New Orleans, yo. I have partners from New Orleans, and some of them Creole, some of them are not. But they have a phrase called Casablanca.
Okay.
Pass is white. That's what it means. Pass is white.
Got it.
And a lot of them got jobs and what have you because of that that European blood in their family.
Mm.
And they put their mask on. You know, a couple months ago we had a show about the mask that we wear when we go out into the world. Some people wear a mask, some people don't. You know, it depends on the person, how you what type of respect that you demand for yourself when you walking around on this earth, not in the virtual reality of radio or the virtual reality of social media, but when you go walking around physically on this earth, you have a mask on. Some of us do, some of us don't. I tend not to wear a mask. I have too many issues that I deal with, and putting on the mask is not at the forefront of my mind. One of my worst tendencies is to be brutally honest. if you ask me a question, be sure that you want the answer.
Yep.
Because there are a few people, there are only a few people that I will lie to. And most people say that, you know, all of us do things, excuse me, all of us do things for different reasons. But me telling you a lie to protect your feelings is not at the forefront of my mind. I don't care that much about you, just to be frankly honest. You know, I could like you, we could build, but I'm not going to go out of my way to use something that's going to hurt me upon this judgment day that I believe we all have to face. I'm not going to use something as precious as a lie that's going to be counted towards my life. I'm not going to waste it on you because you're not that important to me.
Yes, sir.
So, I mean, but just to get back to what I was saying as far as the qualifiers, people take what other people say and they bend it to their own twisted reality. Khalif Muhammad was just talking about Fraud Muhammad being of mixed ancestry.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of people that's the only thing that they could get on him. That was the only thing that they could come up with when they started counting all of the lives that they have helped, whether we like it or not, how they went about doing it. Fact of the matter is that the doctrine that he got these people addicted to, I do call it an addiction, this doctrine or this religion that he got these people addicted to, it straightened them up off of drugs. It got them up out of the street. It gave them a purpose, whether it was their purpose or somebody else's. It gave them something to do with their time to be beneficial
to the society.
Forget about society, but just to their families.
Yeah,
to their families and to their communities. It gave them some structure that some of us don't always have.
Discipline.
And since they couldn't find nothing else, this is what they went to go dig into. And because of the way Khalif Muhammad bangs on the other races, that was the perfect time for them to get something out of him by way of mentioning that about his teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't agree with everything that he said. And I don't agree with everything that he has said through. Like, if you don't know about him, you probably should go check him out.
You really should.
His brother is awesome. You may not like everything that he says. You may love everything that he says. But this brother is, he gives you the real from his perspective. I always keep that in mind. I'm taking this information from someone else's perspective. That's why I like to go back to the authority that they hold themselves up under. One of the questions in today's thread was the moral authority. Who has the moral authority to say who is black or melanated, depending on what term you would like to use? Who has that authority? Well, up under this system of white supremacy, they have the authority. And we learned a long time ago that I want to, and correct me if I'm wrong, Rise, isn't it a 16th of black blood? Is that what they deemed? A 16th of black blood.
And I believe they
bag
called
them test.
I believe they called them octoroons. That was the deepest numerological reference, but I believe you're correct.
Right.
Yeah.
So if they are, if they are the gatekeepers to racial classification, why is it that some of us take what they say and then try to convince the rest of us that we should believe what they say when we know that the laws that are put in place operates off of that 16th percent of blood? Now, the reason I bring that up is because there was a lot of jaw jacking and what have you, not on the radio show or what have you, but just online. And I've been seeing it in a lot of circles, a lot of circles, whether we're talking about BTR community. Shout out to you once again, Brother Scotty, for creating that for us. Facebook, Twitter, WhatsApp, you know, just all of these social media platforms. They a lot of us are having these conversations, but nobody's ever getting down to the main focal point of who makes the rules and what do they say. And we already know what they say. I just stated the 16th of black blood. They go all the way back to there. Now, that could be what we would deem a straight up white person. Pale, can't take the sun, or any of that. Have a 16th of black blood, and they are designated. If they find out that you have that in you, then that's what you are designated as. You will be shunned for that. And these, we have records that's been documented to prove that point. That point. What I don't understand is that when you have a problem with somebody and then you start attacking children, the question was asked, once again, not to pick on melanated roots, but this is where that question originated from. Should we separate? I've been thinking about this for quite some time. I had mentioned that my children are biracial, and I teach them. Actually, I've gained more acquaintances because of what my children teach other young black children, and they go home and they teach their parents, and their parents want to know who I am. Just at the graduation, I met three parents that wanted to get together and have a conversation with me. Not with our children or none of that. A few of them did, but they wanted to have a conversation with me. Where did I find this information? How do I know about this? And how can they spread this amongst their own family? This is the kind of help that I try to give. It ain't nothing that I try to boast about, because it's nothing boastful. The reason I do it is because I didn't receive that same type of help. Once again, that's why I started the show, was to be able to get this type of information out, because I felt that it took too long for me to figure this out. So I teach my children at a young age. They go off and they share it with their friends, their peers, and their peers share it with their parents, and their parents want to know why they didn't know about it. And once they find out who gave that information out, they want to sit and discuss these type of things. And I think it's wonderful myself, because I know that and I almost got emotional one show just thinking about all of the stuff that I didn't learn. Because I have a huge family. My grandmother and my grandfather, Maple Irma Roof and Chick Choice, they had 20 children between the two of them, 19 together, and my grandfather had one before the marriage. And I have to teach my uncles and my aunts this same information. But then we also have people who have come across this information, and they feel that since they know somewhat, what I come to find out is that they really don't know much most of the time, because they're so consumed with themselves that they use the information that they received, and they don't even disseminate it in the same way that they took it in. And I think that's dangerous. I think that's very dangerous, because we're sending our children out with bad information. And what happens when you go out with bad information, especially when we're talking about in the white supremacist state that we live in?
You can lose your life.
It could get you. It could get you murdered. It could get you murdered.
Hey,
I hear you, Scotty. We're gonna come right to you. On top of that, when you do, then those white supremacists who've been studying us long before we came in contact with this information, they destroy us. I've seen it happen many a times on social media. Somebody find out something, don't even have all of the accurate information, but it make them feel good. Well, this what we talking about, emotional politics, because that's what this history is. It's politics.
Mm-hmm.
Emotional politics puts you in a place to where you are very, very vulnerable. And you don't even like other black or other melanated people telling you that you're wrong. How are you going to react when it's suspected or flat out racist comes and cleans out your mental clock because you have been presenting the information wrong? Brother Scotty, go ahead.
Yeah, you mentioned the term white supremacy, and you also talked about people disseminating information in ways that it was not disseminated to them. And so, like today, I've been asking this one guy for a definition. What's a white supremacist? What's your definition of a white supremacist? Because you seem to be speaking generally about white people. And so where do you even get this term from, white supremacy? And, you know, you seem to be quoting Neely Fuller, but Neely Fuller never said white people are white supremacists. He said you had to be white to be a white supremacist. So if I go by his definition, Neely Fuller's definition, he said white supremacy is about mistreatment based on the skin color. So if you are white and you believe in mistreating people because they're non-white, that in his dissemination of information, that what determines a white supremacist. But I see people using that term and applying it broadly, and that ain't how he disseminated it. Is that kind of like what you're talking about?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about. I'm glad you brought that up, Brother Scotty. And we're going to come to you, Chris. All you got to do is just speak up, yo.
But one last thing, Jenna, one last thing. When I kept asking the guy, define white supremacist, also define plan, because people have different definitions for terms and words. And I want to, you know, I don't want there to be no confusion. And so absolutely. I was like, just define simply for me in your mind. And I didn't tell him, you know, what Mr. Fuller said or that I agree with that statement by Mr. Fuller. I said, just define white supremacist. This person wouldn't even define it for me. I know what my enemy, I know who my enemies are. So I'm like, ain't no sense me even conversating with this person because they only want to answer basic, simple questions so that we can
lessen confusion. I know this ain't got nothing to do with it, Scotty, but was this the conversation you was having about the 500-year plan?
Yes.
Okay.
Hey, Brother Chris.
Yeah, brother.
Yes, sir.
Okay. I just two things. That phrase I told you about Dolomite, that was a Dolomite phrase, how the type of person that'll fart in the bathtub, turn around and bite the bubble. That's the kind of people we dealing with.
That's a classic one, man. I love Dolomite.
1976.
I was 3 years old.
That's horrible, man.
I was 1 month, but and I still got a hold of it. But you know, he was dying off when he heard that. But it came from Dolomite, that human tornado. Oh,
classic.
Human tornado. These terms cause confusion.
Yes.
Because you pick up titles with these terms. And I'll say this, you know, these titles, they make you feel like you somebody, then you realize you're not, but then you act upon it. And then you start justifying and categorizing people this and saying that. And
yo,
it trickles down to them, and then it comes to us, but we all the same. But then our people start using these terms and start telling you, well, you ain't this enough and you ain't that enough, but wait a minute, you with that enough and you with that enough. But if you notice, when that brother was speaking, he mentioned some of the people that was in his family.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And he said it. But even though he still said it, you still had half the crowd feel like they still wanted to kill Whitey.
Yeah.
And roll with him. Now, I'm not knocking the brother because I listen to the information too, because they're about justice. And I think those terms and how people are treated and how they're classified is what makes them fight, because they're trying to get justice.
Well, let me stop you right there, Chris. Let me stop you right there real quick. And I'm going to hand it right back over to you. I was talking about emotional politics before Scotty had his question. Emotional politics. A lot of us walk through life on a day-to-day basis, and we get brutalized mentally, physically, emotionally. We just get brutalized for being black or melanated, whatever term you would like to use. We get brutalized for that. So when you, I also made the statement of us having a virtual reality by way of the radio and by way of social media, the internet. When we getting brutalized on a day-to-day basis, walking through the streets and we have to get out of people's way, we come on, we want to be something else. We want to be something else. Who wants to be treated like that? So when you have a whole nother persona when you get onto the internet or when you get onto the radio. Some of us do. And that's just the nature of it. You know, we say things that we know we're not going to do, but we love to hear when somebody else has went through it. And then we get upset. It's like, yo, they did him wrong when that person got murdered for doing something that you was lying about from the get-go. You know, we have to address these things, not because it's about calling somebody, straightening somebody out. None of that. We die enough up under this slave mentality of America to where we get murdered by the police and we get murdered by each other for these same reasons. So when these things are happening, we... on this show, it's my duty to not allow that to happen. That's something that I done took on. It's my duty to not let nobody do that, because people get hurt every day. But I'd be damned if I let them get hurt because I allowed some bullshit to come across the airwaves on my show.
Yes, sir.
forgive me for the language. I know I try to let that go from time to time, but that's what it is though, because people say and do anything when they are not held accountable. When you have to me and you done had a few conversations out, and you know one of the things that I hate the most is when I'm in a conversation and somebody to just step in and start talking. And I work around a lot of white people. Actually, it's a few black people that work with me, but they don't work with me. So in my area, it's only white people. And if they bust up and they see I'm talking, I don't even have to be talking. I can be singing. I done stuck my foot down their throats enough times for them to sit there and wait for me to acknowledge them. That's just how I operate, though. You know, when I'm on the phone having a conversation, whether I'm talking to my mama, one of my partners, or what have you, these people will see me talking and they will wait. Or they'll wave me down. You know, because I don't have no problem answering their questions or nothing. I'm at work, you know. But you're not, certain things you're not going to do. Now, if all of us adopted these particular things, I'm not saying that it'll be great, because I don't know if you could do that. Got to remember, you was a certain way before tonight's show. But we coming up on the break, and we'll get into the rest of this on the other side of the break. You listen to Real Life, the radio show. We'll be back in a few moments.
Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium.
Yo, I thank you, Scotty. I needed that too. I needed to take me a little sip of water real quick.
Right.
Brogan draft. Go ahead, sir. Brother Chris. Well, hold on, Chris. Yeah. Let me finish that thought real quick. What I was saying though is that this is something that I do personally. I'm not telling nobody else to go out there and do that, because before tonight's show, and you heard how I address the dynamics that I live in on a day-to-day basis, everybody can't go out there and do that because you've already been accepting this abuse beforehand. So now you're changing, which will bring you extra confrontation because you haven't been that way. You have to I don't know if it's a proverb, but I know I've been hearing it my whole life. Do things the same way you always done them, because when you start changing, people know you're doing something different. It's the same thing with your counter-racist.
That's a,
oh, is it?
Okay. Well, let me say this for you. Okay. So, you laying it. Y'all laying it down, and it's valid. But, I'll just say this. As long as people keep operating emotionally under black and white terms and treating people certain ways based on that analogy and not on a justice way. I mean, you could call yourself black and think about justice. You could say I'm white and think about justice if you don't associate that racism or that depression with those terms. But when you call yourself those terms and you treat people accordingly because of how they look, you operating incorrectly. And that Neely book, he brought out a good point. He brought out some good points and valid points. Those terms are basically coined to rule, to conquer, to you go here, I go there. But we gonna have to use them differently going forward. Because that's how we really pretty much going to have to operate. It ain't going to go nowhere, not in our lifetime. So we're going to have to operate it under a justice standpoint, or, it's never going to get better.
Absolutely.
I agree with some of that. I'm not going to tell you no lie. When I come in, I judge people off of how I interact with them. I could think about you a certain way when I see you. I mean, all of us have biases, and if we if we deny that, then we're just lying to ourselves. But your biases should not interrupt anything that you have going on. You know, it's just something that you should be aware of. Once you are made aware of that. Because that doesn't stop you from interacting with whoever you're interacting with. You just have a certain way that you're thinking about them at that time. And you could keep that after your initial engagement. I wouldn't tell anybody to disregard it, because you never know when that side that you're probably thinking about. Because remember, your gut is right most of the time. So if you're feeling that way about a person, you're probably right. But for you to act on that when you first meet a person, you're doing a disservice to yourself, because whether that person was black, white, Asian, Mexican, I'm not finna go through all of the ethnicities, but whatever they are, you could have your thoughts about them, but that could be the person that's gonna save your life physically, emotionally, or financially. And because you could not hold your emotions, you will disrupt that altogether. Think about it. Most of the people on this call and on BTI Network, which is, as far as I know, are all black people. The worst interactions we have done had with these slave catchers was with slave catchers that looked like us.
Absolutely.
So, it's an exception to everything. You don't have to believe in it. That doesn't stop the fact that it's true. And if you operating on something that's not based in reality, you're going to get something that you're not looking for. That's just the truth of the matter. But go ahead, Brother Chris. And I know Brother Rise got something he wanted to add into. Because we do have another video that we wanted to show before tonight's.
Last point I was going to make was about the fruit. the pineapple, the anything acid, you probably need to blend it, because too much acid, it does make the teeth sensitive. For people who like,
yeah.
Oh, I'm about to just start eating.
Yeah, it breaks down. Yeah, now.
Yeah, it you know, you do it for a whole week, you start feeling some sensitivity. So.
Yeah,
it breaks down.
You are correct. Already sensitive on other stuff. Now you don't need no sensitive teeth.
Chris, you didn't have to say that, yo.
Had a throw a shot.
Man. Go ahead, bro.
Oh man, Don, I done lost my train of thought.
Yo, well, really, why are you trying to get your train of thought back, yo? Let me get this number out one more time, yo.
Yes, sir.
If you have a question or comment for anything that we're discussing right tonight, by all means, give us a call. The number is 704-802-5056. That number again is 704-802-5056. Press **, put yourself in queue, and we'll get with you as soon as possible. Once again, shout out to everybody that's checking us out on Uber Conference.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for joining us here tonight. And hopefully between this conversation that we're holding right now and all of the medical stuff that we went over earlier in the show, it's going to be beneficial to you and your family, whether we're talking about your children or your elderly or just you yourself. We got to take care of all of that, because nobody's going to take care of it for us. Brother Ross?
Yes, I was just going to say, me, I deal with people in the capacity in which the situation arises. So anytime I deal with folks, it's always with a purpose. And it's only people who I consider friends. And for me, the term friends and family go hand in hand. So those are the only people in my life that I deal with in a capacity out of strictly, hey, with, you know, even with them, I'm like that too, though. We just are doing something productive. And for me, like you said, we all have our prejudices when we first, you know, see people based on whatever life experience, things you may have heard, things you may have seen, or whatever the case may be. But once you're dealing with the person for a purpose, then all of that goes out the window. If they're good at the job, they're good at the job. You treat them with respect. They, you know, treat you with respect in return. They do a good job. You know, if you're paying them for a service, you're paying for the service. If you are working towards a particular goal, then you make sure that you keep that relationship positive and functional. So in that regard, if it's a person that you don't necessarily resonate with, you might choose to speak as little as possible about anything outside of the context of what y'all are working on. So for me, I make all of those adjustments on the fly. I don't sit there and just, you know, wholesale look at a person and say, oh, that's a white person. So, you know, whatever capacity I'm working with them, I don't assume that they're, you know, there's something inherently wrong with the way they do things. Now, I do keep my antenna up, because I know that, you know, white people practice racism. So I keep that in the back of my
it's
mind.
A history
a possibility,
of it.
Right, that's a possibility. But I don't judge them on it. I judge them based on the quality of what we're doing when we do what we have to do. And once I'm done, I move on and that's it. So it's really just about
that. How stressful is that, yo?
It's not really stressful for me.
How stressful is that?
Because it's all about context.
No. Not for you in particularly.
Oh, okay.
I mean, but just for some of us who walk around with that innate ability to place. Because me and you done had private conversations. I'm not even going to get into it tonight, but
mm-hmm.
we done had private conversations, and you know how I look at these things through, you know, my eyes are bad anyway, so that might be the reason. But through these bad eyeballs that I have to live with, you know, I look at things differently. I don't give that type of respect or power to just anybody. And all of the people who would like to do it, who would like to be a white supremacist, you got to be kind of special to be a white supremacist. That means that you have power. You have power over me, whether you have somebody with you or you don't. That's how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot of white people that want to have that. They just don't. And I, man, I give them hell. I give them hell for all of y'all, all the stories that I hear from y'all here, other programs, family. I give them the business. And then when I walk past them the next day, I get all the respect. How you doing? How you doing, Jerry? I'm saying, hey, did you hear about such and such? You know, give me the news updates, you know, stuff that I'm not even asking for, because they don't want to be on that side of me again.
I have to say something.
What if all of us took that approach? Go ahead, Ross.
One thing Dr. Wilson said on the cows that I will never forget, because I agree with it emphatically, and we've talked about this off air as well. White people know who they can take advantage of in that kind of overt fashion. And even Gus brought up, Jeffrey Dahmer. And I saw his documentary. I recommend everybody see it. It's I think it's Jeffrey Dahmer In His Own Words or something. But he literally said that he knew how to pick who his victims were, like a predator. He knew that there were people he couldn't really try that crap with, and he didn't. And he knew that the people that he could, and the vast majority of them were non-white people, mostly black people. And he had a couple of
Ross. Mm-hmm. Pause for a second. Do you think a lot of us even realize that? Of course, the white supremacists realize it. Do you think a lot of us realize it, though?
I don't think a lot of us realize it. I know that I realized it just being a pariah to my community. When I ran the streets, I knew people I could vic. You see certain people, they have certain mannerisms, certain ways they carry themselves. You can tell they're aloof and not paying attention. And man, if it was going down, you was getting run up on real quick, and it wouldn't take long. You know, that's just the way it is. So just being a person that comes from that background, I know that it's just how, when you get into that mode of that frame of mind, it is like a predator and prey. You know the best. You take the path of least resistance. It's like electricity. Electricity ain't gonna take the long way around if it got a straight shot through the top of your head. It's just not the way it's gonna work. Thanks. So, you know, that's pretty much how white folks function. And I've experienced that too, where I've seen white people like hone in on certain folks. And, you know, I don't know if I've ever said this on the air, but I've never had a white person call me a nigga. It just it hasn't happened. I've actually had black people call me nigga, but I haven't had a white one call me nigga, not once. And it's just about, I think Dr. Wilson was correct, that they have an instinct. There's an instinct to how they function when it comes to practicing overt white supremacy. And there's certain people that they just wouldn't try that stuff with, you know? And I agree with that, you know? And sadly, I think the people who don't know that are the people who probably function in a way that will most likely get them victimized. Because I got two questions. Mm-hmm.
Now go ahead, finish your point. I just got two questions after that.
Oh, no problem. I was just going to say. I think the people who most are invested in assimilating into the system instead of creating a system of justice are the ones who get mostly victimized. The ones who are like, "I'm an American, you know, I'm just like everybody else in America," and they talk that holistic speech as if there is no system of white supremacy. Those are usually the ones that you see that go through the most horrific terrorization when it comes to just getting it in intensely. And if not that, they're just folks that might be confused about the system, whether it's the types of relationships that they've had with people, however they might have been indoctrinated to see the world, and they might not see the world for what it really is. And these are all things that, you know, that are just, it happens to everyone, you know. I just think that just from life experience, when I heard Dr. Wilson say that, it resonated with me, you know, and just because. And I'm not saying nothing will ever happen. It's always possible, you know. But the bottom line is that I just don't have it in me to take any crap from anybody. You're not going to do that. That's just not my thing. And if I got to lay down, I'm taking somebody with me or whatever the case may be. That's pretty much the way I look at it. I don't have a problem with that. Yeah. And, you know, I just codified my life in a way in which I use a lifestyle that creates a path of least resistance. Because, and my wife has even said it, she said the way you live your life is so conducive to staying out of stuff. I said, well, yeah, you know, it's just easier for me to do things the way I do it now than when I did it when I was younger, because I was making music, I was doing all of that, so I was always out and about. Everybody knew who I was. It was just always recognition, and I got tired of being known. So I went into straight incognito mode, and that's the life I live now, and it's less stressful, it's easy, and like I said, when I deal with people, there's always a purpose to what we're doing. It's always some sort of constructive purpose. If not, then I keep to myself. And it's not anything against anyone. It's just the way I choose to function. That's the optimal way.
Yeah, maximizing your time, man. Maximizing
exactly
your
it.
Time.
But yeah, that's it. But I really, let me ask this.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask this question, yo. And I know I took a lot of time tonight, yo, because this is something that I deal with personally.
This is good. I think this needs to be discussed.
And I would not, like I stated earlier, I would not allow anybody to just anybody. That's anybody, family members, friends, acquaintances, none of that, to just make a mockery of my lineage. Nah, mm-hmm. It's not happening. One of my questions, and I have two. One, and I'm gonna ask this first one.
Okay.
We was discussing a couple weeks ago the mulatto question, right? We had the mulatto question. That was our topic a couple weeks ago. Do you think some of this ignorant it probably was. You know, a lot didn't happen since last week. You know, I be bugging sometimes. One of the biggest things that I was thinking about is that, and Brother Scotty had pointed it out before I even got a chance to. Of course, that's a racist term, mulatto.
It's a slur. It's a slur.
A lot of people may not know that. A slur. Yes, a racial slur. Excuse me. A lot of people may not know that. They just unheard it and they use it. But do we put those children, because you gotta remember, is that the children didn't ask to be here,
right?
So are we directly and on purpose and purposely, excuse me, are we directly and purposely pushing those children away to act in the manner that these people say that they will act? I mean, like, how would you act, Roz, if you was going around your brothers and sisters and they was constantly banging on you for whatever reason? You gonna want to get back at them too, would you not?
Oh, without question. It's just natural human behavior to want to, in some
get
way,
even.
return the favor to the object of your harassment. And that's where the whole concept of what Chris said about functioning based on justice comes from. The whole idea is that when you look at the history of so-called mixed race children, what you find is that overwhelmingly the community that accepted them in was the black community, not the white one. Doesn't mean they had an easy walk in the black community either, you know, because a lot of times they're not black enough. And sometimes it might be the darker people that might be even a little bit jealous of the fact that they're lighter. You know, all of these things come into play, because then you're dealing with colorism. And the
right.
colorism thing was instated from the moment that the colonizer mixed genetics with us. That was one of the first things they exploited, the simplest thing. What do they look like? How do we facilitate setting up a spot in society for them where we think they are most efficacious beneficial towards our agenda. Now, what would happen is, based on the child's experience, they would either gravitate towards helping the enslaved, or whichever parent that is, which was usually the black female, or they would gravitate towards helping the master. Now, sometimes it would come from being shunned by the slaves. And the slaves would shun them sometimes based on the fact that that child spent the lion's share of their time with the master. So they started taking on his ways and mannerisms, and they knew that that child was no longer trustworthy. In other cases, the child would gravitate towards the slaves because the slaves would treat them better. And as a result, they would develop very tight bonds with their black relatives, and they would do things to help those black relatives. And in some cases, because those lighter-skinned children were more acceptable, pleasing to the eye of the master, sometimes they would be the ones that were that were poisoning the master. You know, I was watching the documentary. Yo, they were talking about...
Let me stop you right
there, Ron. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Let me stop you right there, because we got 7 minutes, yo. I ain't even gonna get into that next question, but that I had. I think we might need to have a part two about this, because I have plenty to say. I had another question while you was talking, though. Do you think some of these accusations and these quote unquote theories that people have, do you think that comes from them not being able to maneuver around not only this nation but the earth? Because I find that a lot of people who are not grounded in just sociology, and I'm not even talking about in the book sense, I mean just getting around and meeting people physically from where they're from and from other places, that they have this kind of twisted, demented type of thinking because they don't have to go nowhere else, or they haven't been able to go anywhere else. Do you think that plays a part in how they construct their thought pattern on these type of issues?
I would say I think the thought pattern is based on conditioning. I believe some people are conditioned. And sometimes, to be honest with you, some of the information that's purported by Neely Fuller can sometimes have a detrimental effect psychologically. And I'm not saying that it's bad wholesale. I'm saying that some people get so trapped in that mindset of white people being powerful that they just give in. You know, it's the same thing I said before. I believe that black people are being epigenetically changed to accept their place as far as inferior status in the system. And I believe that white people have been and are being epigenetically changed to do the opposite. And those people, those children who are born that have that ancestral memory, that ancestral character that rears its head in the mind and the heart of an innocent child, those are the ones that carry that spark of, hey, this is not the way it's supposed to be. But I believe a lot of us, and sometimes we're epigenetically changed in one lifetime, so we become docile and subservient. We just think, oh, white people in charge. And it's not saying that
it's
not
correct. Ross.
Go ahead.
Brother Ross, let's stop it right there. We got 4 minutes left. You got to do the prayer before we head it on out. Thank you, everybody, for checking us out, especially y'all viewers that didn't chime in, but y'all paying attention. Hopefully it was constructive to you and all of the listeners who did call in. I wanted to ask you this one more question, yo.
Yes.
Before you hit us with the prayer.
Okay.
Me and you done had these conversations, and a lot of the stuff that Neely Fuller, I agree with some of it I don't.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I look at it the way I look at it, because I know that he wrote this book from a victim standpoint. Do you think operating in a victim's standpoint, from a victim standpoint, excuse me, is beneficial to us today? It helped him survive. I understand why he wrote it in the manner that he wrote it. But does that help us today working from a victim's point of view? And it seems that before we get out of here, Scotty has a question also. So go ahead, Brother Rise, and I mute myself. Thank you for everybody that continues to come check us out. We'll see y'all next Tuesday. Peace.
Go ahead. I'll answer your question after Scotty. Go ahead, Scotty.
Yeah. Something that he just stated, and I don't want to incorrectly repeat what he just said, but it was along some thinking that I had, like the question that I asked earlier, like I saw somebody on Twitter use this term, and it's not the first time they use this term, and they say white supremacists have a 500-year plan. They plan things way out into the future. Again, what white supremacists you talking about? Who are these white supremacists? Do they have names? What's the plan? Because a plan is a detailed outline with steps that you follow. So where can I read this plan, this 500-year plan I keep hearing people talking about, so I can study it? Because if you know the plan, you ought to be able to come up with some counters to the plan. So point me to this plan. Or are we just saying stuff because it sound good, or we heard somebody else say it? Now, for example, I said, I can tell you that people, I don't know if they're white supremacists, but they're white, mm-hmm. who belong to an organization, and it's a bunch of them, and their names are public. The organization was a think tank, a neoconservative think tank called PNAC. And I could say that these suspected racists, because I don't know if they're white supremacists, but suspected racists came up with a plan to develop biological weapons that could target people based on their phenotype, you know, like their physical characteristics, melanin, their hair type, their eye color. These people actually put this in a plan, in a document called Rebuilding America's Defenses. So I'm being specific. I'm telling you who, Project for a New American Century, and I'm telling you the name of the plan, Rebuilding America's Defenses. Because when I hear people say, looks like...
Yeah.
Got
that's dope.
I'm going to call right back in. I'm going to restart the conference, so call right back in.
Okay.
All right, do that.
Okay, no problem. Right.
That's dope.
Yeah.
Can y'all still hear me?
I can still hear you, yeah.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Well, we must have hit the five. No, it shouldn't have been no. I don't know what happened there. Okay, so.
Nah, it's a 1 minute.
Okay. So, yeah, but it's a 5-hour limit. It shouldn't have cut off. We only been on for 3 hours. So, anyway, what I was saying was when we say things like white supremacists have a 500-year plan, what you're really saying is black people don't plan for anything, and that's why we're victims. It's like anti-blackness to me. And I feel like we give these people, we call them white supremacists, even though we may not be able to name any names or point to any documents or their plans or anything, we give them this mythological power like they're super beings, man. So that's what you reminded me of or brought back to my remembrance when you said what you said, Jenna.
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly. Can y'all hear me?
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, because I don't see myself up here. I tried to dial back in, but that's exactly what I be talking about. I feel that way, and I have I'm not gonna mention who my partners is that do this, but they don't know me when I describe these particular traits that I try to execute in my day-to-day life. But I told them, I was like, yo, you do the same thing, you know. They go and they bash people, like when you can't call me then see me, but you gonna feel me. And that's exactly what I was saying about that, you know. They walk right through these people, and this is a solid gentleman, you know. It's gonna be kind of hard for you just to breeze through if he got those shoulders squared and you trying to walk across him like he gonna move. He ain't moving, you know. Yes, you can call for some backup, but that's not gonna help you in that particular moment. And if I'm not a dummy, I'm not gonna stay there and wait for you to get some actual bona fide white supremacists to come take care of me, you know. So these are the thought processes, you know. It's little by little. I'm not trying to change anybody's mind or nothing like that. I just be trying to just share my thought process. Brother Rise, please go ahead on and hit us the prayer before it cut off on us. And thank you for that, Brother Scotty. And yeah, thank everybody for joining us tonight. We'll see y'all next Tuesday. Peace.
Yes, peace. Creator, we ask that you help us to remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us to remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times and all places. Each and every time that we are in contact with another black person, it has been time to replace white supremacy with justice ASAP. I am in the love of the all, and all love is in me. I am a part of the all, and the all is a part of me. I am one with the all, and the all is one with me. I can succeed as a part of the all and fail as an individual. I can be all that I wish in the all as long as my wish is to stay in the all. I am never alone. The all is. I am. The all can. I can. The all does. I do. Peace and love. Have a wonderful Tuesday. We'll see you next week.
Hey, one more thing before we get up out of here, man. For all of y'all that be viewing us and checking us out, listening on TuneIn app and what have you, since we done been blessed to come on and speak over Black Talk Radio, if you disagree,
no, it really is.
You have some valid points that you want to make, call in and let us know. There's no need to run around in circles and talk about people. This platform is open for y'all as well. But just know, if you don't have your stuff together when you come forth, you will get blasted. Big facts.
Yes, sir.
With that being said, we love y'all anyway.
And all the time.
You know, keep yourself, what Mayweather say, protect yourself at all times.
What up, son? Yes, sir.
Like Scotty says, we live behind these enemy lines. Y'all be careful. We'll see y'all next week. Peace.
It's got to be the same way in music. Otherwise, it isn't music. Always remember, never follow the crowd. I have something important to tell you. And I'm going to let you know.
What it is.
I believe in revolution, the retribution with 2 tons of pollution. I take a shit on you.